Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is a blissful day, and today is my birthday. I just turned 31, everyone, so I'm very excited. And also, I'm excited to have my guest, Michael J. Russer, who is a prostate cancer survivor, but he ended up getting erectile dysfunction. So this will be an interesting topic, so keep your eyes open, your ears open, keep your comments positive, and tune in. And if you need to call in, the number is 347-426-3751. Again, 347-426-3751. Michael, how are you today?
Oh, I am doing wonderful, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you. I feel so good.
Well, ideally, that is when you do feel really good, is on your birthday.
Okay, and I had to request off of work. I said, I can't deal with stress, no customers. Today is all about me. Michael, can you give us a little background about yourself?
Well, sure. I'm 62 years old. I just had my birthday on January 4th. And for the last 18 or so years, up to about 2.5 years ago, I was an international speaker and author, primarily about technology. And then 2 years ago, last September, I made a very fateful choice in my life. I decided that I no longer wanted to live shut down. Now, keep in mind, Technisha, that I was a very successful international speaker. I would speak in front of thousands of people, very gregarious. And yet, even in those situations, a person can hide behind that and put up some barriers around their heart. And I did that not only in my work, but also in my personal life with my kids, my wife, you name it. And I felt as though, after years of that I was dying inside. So I made a choice at that time, which was early September 2011, that I would never, ever, ever be that way again. And what that launched was quite something, because part of that was that I ended a 26-year marriage where the last 11 years where we were essentially celibate for the sake of the kids. We stayed together until our youngest son went off to college, and we're very respectful towards each other and very faithful, but just not intimate either emotionally or sexually. And so I threw myself into my work, which was another way of kind of burying oneself and distracting oneself from not feeling. And I decided that was not going to be the case anymore. So I ended the marriage, and then I also walked away from my career. I said, I'm not doing this anymore until I get to the point where I figure out how to be heart open and live fully, and then I'll figure out what's next for me. And I've developed a lot of different skill sets. A lot of different skill sets over 62 years. So I'm pretty confident that, you know, I'll be able to land on my feet. But I had to jump into the abyss and really not know what was next for me. Now, ironically. What's that?
I was saying that was a big risk, you know, walking away from your job and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And in the process of walking away from the marriage, I also lost every friend that I had that was associated with the marriage. And so, yeah, absolutely. Well, it gets more interesting because 2 months after that, a lot of people think it was the other way around, but it isn't. It was 2 months after I did all that I was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Oh, okay.
And And in my family, cancer means you're going to die. So I, five out of five other immediate family members who have had cancer of various types have passed away. And I'm number six. And so it's very prevalent in my family, and it is 100% deadly. When we did the biopsy in November of 2011, it came back saying, hey, you know, it doesn't look too bad. You have months to think about how you want to treat it because, the treatment protocols can have significant impact on your lifestyle. And I said, I've already thought about it. Take it out. Take it out now. And I just had an intuition about it. And so they arranged for the surgery. It was called a radical prostatectomy. It's the complete removal of the prostate. They arranged for that in about 45 days later. And when they did the tissue studies after the surgery, they found that it was very aggressive. And if I hadn't had that surgery when I did, if I waited as long as they suggested, I probably wouldn't be around right now. It was that aggressive. Yeah, and in fact, as brilliant of a job as they did with the surgery, they didn't get it all. So I had to go through 7 weeks of daily radiation treatment, and they still didn't get it all. So I technically still have the cancer, but it seems to be under control right now. Well, as a result of all that, the irony of all ironies is that I was rendered fully and completely and clinically impotent, which means I cannot achieve an erection for purposes of intercourse. And now keep in mind, I was celibate for 11 years. So now,
you have to take anything, Viagra?
Doesn't work. Doesn't work for me. And so after 11 years remaining faithful and then finally being able to morally and legally able to have relations with another woman, I'm now, saying, you've got to be kidding me. So I went through the four stages of loss and it's definitely a loss for you talk to any man, they'll tell you they actually fear that more than the cancer itself, many men. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of men avoid getting tested, because they're more concerned about the implications of the treatment rather than the cancer itself, which is really a shame. A lot of men die because of that. So I went through the four stages of loss going, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And then anger mostly at myself. Because I, because all that shut down all those years, and then the third stage for many men is, or for most men, I would say, who are in this situation, is depression. Now, I'm not a depressive person by definition, so I went more into negotiation. Maybe I'll try this, or maybe I'll try that, but a lot of men get stuck in depression, and they feel broken. They feel like they're not men anymore. And our culture, unfortunately, supports that belief. And it's a limiting belief. It's just a belief, and it's not true, but it supports it. And you just watch any Viagra commercial or Cialis commercial or the way porn is. I mean, it's just everything in our culture pretty much says that you're not a man unless you can get it up, keep it up, and, keep going. And but that's a choice, and I made a different choice with the help of my partner, who I met a year after all of this, just a wonderful, incredible woman.
You still with her today?
She's off working right now, but she and I are together. Yes, very much so.
Mike, I want to ask you something. What made you go to the doctor and find out that you had the prostate? Because a lot of men do not like to go to the doctor at all.
Well, because of I get annual physicals, which is a wise thing to do anyway, and especially in my family with such a strong cancer history, so they're looking at potential colon cancer, potential skin cancer, potential, you know, prostate cancer. Well, a simple blood test called the PSA blood marker test will give some sort of indication of whether there's a potential problem or not. And my PSA was fairly stable until around the spring of 2011. It started showing some increases, and then they had me do another blood test in fall of 2011, and that's when it shot up, and they became very concerned. And from there, we went to a biopsy, and it showed, yes, there was cancer in one hemisphere of the prostate and not the other. Well, that turned out to be not true. It was actually my prostate was riddled with cancer, and but they didn't know that until they had it removed. So it was just the annual checkups that, you know, that brought that to fore.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you did go get yourself checked, because that's what a lot of our males need to start doing. And women, too. We got to stop being afraid, because that's what Good Morning America was discussing. A lot of women don't want to go and check and get mammograms when it's you go through all this waxing, and that's painful enough when that's number 2 seconds pain, a little pinch, just to see if you got breast cancer. So we have to start taking better care of our stuff and get out of the illusion. If I go to the doctor, it's going to make me sicker. Well, you know, I feel like this. If it's time for you, it's time for you. Whatever the good Lord got ready for you, that's the plan. But, Michael, now you also say that ED is the best thing that ever happened to your intimate life. Why?
Yeah, that one makes a lot of people take kind of a second notice going, what? And especially in our culture where ED is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to a man. And based on our culture. And as I was saying before, you know, as a man, every man has the ability to make a choice. They can choose to believe what our culture says about what it means to be a man, or you can choose another way to define yourself as a man. And so when I met my current partner and it became clear that we were going to be more than just friends and hiking buddies, and keep in mind, she was the first woman in 30 years, other than my wife, that I will have been with. And so, and I had been celibate for, at the time I met her, 12 years now. And so, yeah, needless to say, I felt pretty ready, but the equipment wasn't working. So the first thing I did is I sat her down to have a conversation, and I remember that fall afternoon with the sunlight streaming in, hitting her face, and I'm looking into her beautiful eyes, and I said, sweetie, and I'm pointing down to my crotch, and I said, this just isn't working, and it probably never will. Are you willing to explore other ways of being intimate and being the wonderful, beautiful person that she is? She said, of course.
Okay.
And that right there, that conversation right there is crucial, because, you see, I had to get to the point of acceptance of this, you know, the isness of my situation. A lot of men shut down and feel broken because they keep fighting it, and they wish it wasn't there, but it's there. And wishing something away, but it is not helpful at all. It's you face it. And then you communicate it very, you know, clearly and vulnerably. And it was not easy for me to communicate that because, again, first woman in 30 years. Secondly, you know, I'm thinking, God, is she going to just stand up, look at her left wrist and say, oh, my, look at the time. Nice talking to you. See you later. You know, I didn't know. And but she didn't. And she said, of course. But, you know, let's explore
that's
that.
Real one.
And what came out of that was nothing short of extraordinary and continues to be that way. And this explains why I say ED is the best thing that's ever happened to me. You see, mm-hmm. when a man gets hard, he has this mm-hmm. overwhelming urge to use it and use it now. A man can become ready in 30 seconds, he can be ready, right?
Yeah.
Women are not built that way. Women are not built that way at all. Women take much longer and require different things to become ready. So the typical sexual response profile for men and women are very, very different. Men can be ready, get the job done, and start snoring in 10 to 15 minutes. And women are like, wait a minute, I'm not even warmed up yet.
I said, you know, it's when we like, we haven't even climaxed. What are you doing?
Exactly. And so what happened with my ED is it literally short-circuited that urge. Now, when I say the urge, I'm not talking about my libido, not my desire, but the urge, the overwhelming visceral urge that comes over men when they're hard. It's a very powerful urge, and it's based both culturally and genetically for primarily the purposes of procreation of the species. And for that purpose, it's beautiful. I mean, you know, it works. But in terms of achieving deep, connecting intimacy at the emotional and physical level, even spiritual level, it's not so great. And because of the differences between men and women. So effectively what happened was is that my ED short-circuited the cultural and biological wiring that typically gets in the way of what most men and women yearn for, which is deep, connecting intimacy, both emotional and physical. So it allowed me to focus on her rather than myself. And literally now we spend hours, when we make love, we spend hours. And the response, and she's fully postmenopausal, which means that, and had never been with a man who had erectile dysfunction before. So she, this was all new to her. Yet what she experiences is beyond anything she's ever had before, because of how I can focus on her for literally an hour or two. And so typically we spend an hour just, you know, just caressing and kissing and just gently kind of getting her ready. And then when she gets to the point of where she's climaxing, she will typically climax a minimum of 5 to 7 times every time we make love. That's a minimum. Occasionally 9 times, and one day was 13 times. And so what she's able to experience because of this, and then the tremendous fulfillment and satisfaction I get out of being able to give that to her, which, by the way, I will say every man is capable of doing. If they can somehow short-circuit that urge that comes over them when they're hard. And so what I tell men is this, because I have to be very careful how I share this with men, because men tend to be rather sensitive about they're, you know, you know what I'm saying, right? And so I made the mistake of just being a little too giddy about, you know, the experience I was having. First of all, a lot of men think I'm contagious, so they only want to talk to me. I've actually had that happen. When you tell them, yeah, you have ED or have erectile dysfunction, it's like all of a sudden they kind of back off a little bit. They back away. But what I do now is I say, look, you're going to be able to, you can do things I'll never be able to do again, and I honor you for that. And everything I'm going to share with you is available to you if you're open to the possibilities. So, you know, let's see if this resonates with you. If it does, awesome. If it doesn't, I totally respect that as well. And when I take that approach with men, they seem to be much more open to hearing what I have to say. Because what I have to say is not only pertinent to people who are struggling, men and women who are struggling with any form of erectile or sexual dysfunction, but it's also for normal couples who have lost their spark or who essentially are affected by what I call the impotence of of disconnect. They're disconnected, and they otherwise love each other, but they don't know quite how to connect at really deep levels. And the insights that my partner and I have gained as a result of this experience and ongoingly really has can have a huge impact on those couples as well. And so, yeah, so is it the best thing that's ever happened to me? Absolutely. In fact, it's kind of funny. We were at a church luncheon once, and there was a man and a woman. They weren't related to each other. They just happened to be sitting across from us. And, of course, the conversation came up, well, what do you do? And I started explaining what I did because I have a book in the process and the whole thing. Well, the man, he was in probably in his mid-40s. He has this, like, funny look on his face. And the next thing out of his mouth is, that's not going to happen to me, you know. And it's like, you know, it's like he treated it like, oh, my God, you know, you poor bastard, you know, you're just, oh, that's never going to happen to me. Well, then my girlfriend was sitting right next to me, and without missing a beat, she looks right at him and says, I hope it never comes back because I've never had it so good. And you should have seen the look on his face then. And my girlfriend is stunningly beautiful. She's very, very beautiful. So she's the kind of woman that a man will look at and find very attractive. And so here's this beautiful, gorgeous woman at basically telling men that she doesn't want her lover's heart on to come back because she has it too good the way it is right now. So that's quite a that was quite an experience. Yet, you know, what's interesting is when I share this story with women, they instantly get it. And I've talked to I can't tell you how many women I've talked to who have been with men who've experienced ED either temporarily or whatever, and said that they were absolutely the best lovers they've ever had, and it's for the same reason, because they don't have that urge that comes over with being hard, which is primarily for the, again, propagation of the species. They're able to focus on their female partner much, much more deeply and connectedly. And as a result, the experience for the female partner is beyond anything they've ever had before. And now here's the irony and the real payoff for men. I think I can safely say this for just about all men out there. Nothing is more important to us than knowing that we can please our partner like no one else. And when we're able to do that and it comes off authentically, you know, not, you know, the fake moaning and the fake climaxes, but authentically, then nothing is more satisfying or fulfilling than that. And so that, you know, kind of doubles back to what I was talking about before. So any man who's affected or worried about ED, you know, affecting, quote-unquote, their manhood, well, another way to look at this is how deeply you're able to connect with and please your partner. And if you use that as the yardstick for defining who you are as a man, well, that's something you have some control over. And based on that, I have no shame, and I have no lack of confidence as to who I am as a man.
Well, Michael, how is it possible to make love for hours, especially if you are fully impotent?
Well, you know, it's I know everybody asks that. Like, first of all, the idea of making love for hours for women when they think about intercourse is not a pleasant thought at all. Because that, you know, hammering away for a couple hours just does not, that is not something that they would look forward to, at least most women. So it's obviously it's not intercourse because I can't get hard and we don't use toys. So I'm completely flaccid when we make love. So the way it starts is this. We start by honoring each other. First of all, we have a very and by the way, if you're going to make love for hours, you better plan it, because my partner and I are both very busy entrepreneurs. We both own our own companies, and I actually run three different companies, And so we have to plan it. We have to set time aside. Now, a lot of people might think, oh, well, where's the spontaneity in that? Well, there really is no such thing as spontaneity, really, because it's all planned anyway. But here you want to set aside at least 2 hours, at least 2 hours. And you set aside a space that will not, there will be no interruption. You turn off all your phones and turn off the computer. Don't have the TV going. I mean, just really set the space well. And then my partner and I typically start with a shower. And we use loofahs, which are like a form of a natural plant sponge. And the first thing I'll do is, I always say ladies first. So I always honor her first. And I'll soap up the loofah and then scrub her down, all her entire body, just not, not overtly sensual or sexual, just scrub her down. It just feels wonderful. She feels honored. She feels, pardon me?
I said, you man better be listening to this. You'll do for your woman.
Yeah. And so scrub her down really nice and gentle. And then when she's done, she'll do the same for me. And then what we'll do is after we're all squeaky clean and everything, we'll head over to the bed. And then we start the massage routine. And I will spend probably minimum half hour to 45 minutes just massaging her back, her neck, her arms, the palms of her hands, which can send her legs, and then her feet. Oh, my gosh. Did you know that there's a spot that every part of your body is connected to some spot on the bottom of your feet? And so
we
do reflexology.
My coworker just mentioned that this past week. She was talking about her, well, we was on the subject of talking about her body part was hurting, but she was saying that every body part is connected to the feet. So something, if something's hurting, it's connected to one of your organs. Wow, that's amazing. We were just talking about that.
That's exactly right. So every part of your body is connected to some part of the bottom of your feet. And so if during the massage of the bottom of the feet, if something is sore, that usually means that whatever that part, we actually have a chart that we got from Amazon for like $5-6. So we can, as we're doing it, we can actually see. We were doing that last night, actually. And so I'll just massage her feet and her legs. So a half hour to 45 minutes without any genital touching at all, just allowing her to relax and warm up and in the process of doing that and giving to her, the emotional intimacy comes into play, and that prepares her and I for, the more sexually oriented lovemaking. But we consider this all part of the lovemaking process. And it's a matter of distinction. A lot of, if you say, what does lovemaking mean to you? If you ask a man, nine out of 10 times they're going to say intercourse, right? Or something, some form of that. If you say that to a woman, they can say the cuddling, the kissing, the stroking, all those things that go with it. And so basically I've learned, thankfully with her help, to make love to her in the way that she wants it. And that's the other thing. Women, my mate is not at all shy about telling me what she likes and how she likes it. And see, here's the thing. No one's told us guys how to do that. We just think we know because of the equipment, right? But no one has told
us. TV.
Yeah. And so I listen because, let's face it, it's like my equipment was not working the way it normally was designed, so what else do I have other than to listen to the coach? And so she coached me. And boy, did that make a difference. What's that?
So, Michael, do you find it much harder for a normally functioning man to experience the deep levels of physical intimacy that you and your partner enjoy?
Well, I think it could be because here's the thing. After my partner and I were making love like this for a few weeks, and it was just incredible, I still had not had intercourse in over 12 years. So I went back to my surgeon. I said, is there anything I can use at all that might, you know, help me experience an erection strong enough to have intercourse? He says, well, there is one thing. And it's a direct injection of a very powerful medication into the penis. It's expensive and it's painful, but it works. And so when I tried it, yeah, I got a blue steel hard-on for about 3 hours. And because of that, my partner and I did actually have intercourse. But here's the thing. When I got hard, those old urges came up again. And I'm going, wow. Oh, I remember that. And it was powerful. It was powerful, but it took me out of being present with her. And it's that sense of presence that is so important if you're going to have the kind of extraordinary intimacy that I talk about in my book and in my speeches, that you take the word performance and get it out of the bedroom, shred it, destroy it, burn it, and replace it with the word presence. And so anyway, so we had intercourse, made love that way, but we both knew immediately afterwards, as wonderful as it felt, it didn't even compare to what we had before. So ever since then, I've stopped using it. And I don't take any pills or anything. So I'm completely flaccid when we make love. So to answer your question, is it harder for men? Yeah, because they need to, with that overwhelming urge. I know what it's like. I've been both places. When you're hard and you have an erection, a strong erection, that there's an overwhelming urge that comes with that. It's all of a sudden, all your focus goes down to your penis. And that is not conducive to deep, connecting, emotional, and physical intimacy like I talked about. So a man has to learn to short-circuit that urge. And I talk about certain ways of doing that. So men who are functioning normally, it can be more difficult at first, but it is certainly very possible and doable.
Well, Michael, why is establishing deep emotional intimacy so important to enjoying the kind of extraordinary physical intimacy you really talk about?
Well, that's a great question because a lot of times when couples start out, you know, the sex is just unbelievable. It's one, that's assuming they're sexually compatible. But what often happens is that it will start waning over time. It becomes not as powerful as it once was. And that will happen if you don't have a strong foundation in the emotional intimacy. The emotional intimacy is the heart connection. And that becomes the foundation. I've learned that without that, everything else falls apart. You may end up starting out with just mind-blowing sex, but it will soon wane and disappear if you don't have that foundation of the heart connection, the emotional intimacy. Now, what's interesting is that because my partner and I have such a strong foundation that way, that the sexual intimacy, the physical intimacy, has only become stronger over time. And so it just keeps getting better and better. I mean, I know it's hard to believe. Yeah, but it just keeps getting better and better.
And that's how relationships are supposed to be. Every day it's supposed to get better and better. The way you met that person and you fell in love with that person, that's the way you still supposed to feel years later. And that's what's supposed to change.
Right.
But are you and your partner, I was going to ask Michael, are you and your partner unique or do other couples with ED have similar experiences?
Well, I actually did a lot of research on this, and it turns out that about 15% of couples who have ED have actually experienced far greater levels of physical intimacy as a result of the ED than what they had prior to it. And so they discovered on their own what my partner and I discovered. I'm just sort of codifying the whole thing in my book. But and this also lends to what I talked about earlier, where you have, you know, I've talked to a lot of women who have been with men who had ED, and they just rave about how they're the best lovers they have ever had. So the 15% of couples who experience this, I suspect, already had a very strong level of emotional intimacy, and they were willing to communicate about this and talk to each other about it. You see, this is a tough subject based on the way our culture is designed and set up to talk about for many men and women. So from the male standpoint, many men feel shame. They feel they're broken, that they're not men anymore. I've had situations where women have contacted me and says, my fiance just says, go find somebody else because he's not a man anymore. I mean, that's how broken some of these men feel. And he's totally shut down. He's totally depressed. He won't talk to me. Well, that's the biggest mistake you can make, because it starts with communication. And women, on the other hand, especially if there's not a lot of communication, they start feeling like, oh, maybe he's just not interested in me anymore. Maybe he just doesn't find me attractive. What's that?
That's all we want, more communication than just the sex.
Right, right. So if she starts, you know, asking him, well, are you just not, you know, what's wrong? Don't you find me attractive anymore? Well, that just adds more fuel to the fire of the man's shame. That's not helpful at all. What is helpful is the man coming, you know, becoming vulnerable and saying, look, this is what's happening. It bothers me greatly that it's happening, but I love you dearly, and I know there's a way that we can work this out. And when a man takes that approach and becomes very authentic and very genuine in his communication, and vulnerable, of course, and to do this, you need to have a strong foundation of emotional intimacy. If the relationship is already shut down emotionally, then it's going to be next to impossible for them to work out the issues dealing with ED. Because there's no, you know, there's probably very little, if any, deep, authentic, vulnerable communication going on anyway. And you get a stressor like a man losing his ability to have an erection. Well, that's going to be like the final nail in the coffin. But if they have a strong foundation of emotional intimacy and have the ability to communicate authentically and vulnerably with each other, then they have a very good chance of turning this around. And that probably explains why only 15% of couples with ED have actually experienced what my partner and I have experienced. Because chances are, when this happens for a lot of couples, they didn't have that level their relationship is already broken in other ways. And so that probably explains why.
But, Michael, you seem to not be suffering at all with that stigma. It has no negative impact on you like most men's self-image. And why is that?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I was at my surgeon holds a quarterly meeting for men and their significant others for the men who may have to be going through prostate treatment of some kind or other. And I went to one of his meetings, and at the end I got up and I thanked him for doing such a brilliant job in surgery, which he did. He did a great job. And I happened to mention that, you know, I happen to be fully impotent, but I'm having, that has not impeded my ability or my partner's ability to enjoy each other sexually at all. And at the end, somebody came up to me. He said, did I hear you right that you're still fully impotent? I said, yeah. He says, then why are you smiling? I said, because I never had it so good. And he's like, huh?
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. I never had it so good. Yeah, so, yeah, there's no shame. I feel absolutely no shame at all because that doesn't serve me, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't serve me at all, and it doesn't serve my partner. And very honestly, I have never even remotely had the level of physical and emotional connection and experience and fulfillment that I have now when things were working just fine. So, yeah, so it truly was a gateway into extraordinary intimacy.
Now, Michael, you wrote a book about Hardly Broken. What is all in this book?
Well, the book Hardly Broken, and people—it's going to be coming out later this year. And folks that are listening can go to hardlybroken.com. That's H-A-R-D-L-Y broken, B-R-O-K-E-N.com. And the entendres associated with that title should be, you know, fairly obvious to people. You know, I'm hardly, if anything, broken. And the point of the book is, no one is broken with this. That's a choice to feel that way or not. And so it's a chronicling of my story, starting with my choice and decision in life to be heart open. And by the way, I mentioned that emotional intimacy is the foundation to all other forms of intimacy. Well, being heart open is the absolute rock, bedrock foundation to emotional intimacy. And so it started all with that, and it chronicles my experience of, you know, going through basically a celibate marriage for the last 11 years and acquiring prostate cancer, going through the treatments, and then going through the process of being open to and discovering what's possible in spite of this quote-unquote condition, and finding out that instead of it being a tragedy, it ended up being one of the biggest blessings in my life and for that of my partner. And so the book is to inspire not only and help couples who are struggling with this issue, but all couples who want to connect much more deeply and have far, far more fulfilling, sexual intimacy as well. And it really is about helping men and women short circuit the built-in cultural and biological wiring that gets in the way of what their hearts truly yearn for, which is deep, abiding connection at the heart level as well as the physical level.
Well, Micah, do you know the percentage of maybe the guys who are affected by this?
Well, the rough numbers are that something like, 15 to 20% of men over 45 are affected by this. And then the percentages just start skyrocketing as you get older. And by the way, prostate cancer is just one of many ways that man can acquire erectile dysfunction. Another big one is diabetes, and that there's a lot more people out there with type 2 adult onset diabetes than there are men with prostate cancer. And men with prostate cancer are in the millions, so you can imagine how many millions of men there are out there with diabetes. Then hypertension, which is another big one. And then various drugs that people take for other conditions can cause it as well. So there's a plethora of reasons why men can achieve this. And what's interesting also is I've been hearing that counselors in college, these are people that meet with the students for various reasons, are finding that more and more young males who are still in college are starting to experience this. And it has to do with, you know, the pressures of our modern society you know, worrying about whether they're going to have a job when they come out, you know, worrying about how they fit into the whole scheme of things in the world. And plus, we live in a very disconnected society, especially for that generation, where the form of connection is either, you know, Facebook, texting, tweeting, whatever, instead of real face-to-face, vulnerable connection. It's very easy to protect oneself. Yeah, they don't know what it's like to connect. And so, what's that?
I was Michael, not cutting you off. Technology is advancing so much now that I was watching Good Morning America because that's my favorite news station most of the day. They were showing video where the doctor can talk to you from a distance and check. Well, they'll have a nurse there checking you, but the doctor will be instructing them. So they're going through cam. They're going on webcam now. I'm like, wow. It's to that point. We don't even want to be close. Even if we're trying to be close, we don't want to because we have distanced ourselves, like you said, with all this Facebook instead of picking up the phone. How are you doing? It's really distant us, and it's very.
You know what the fundamental thing that I talk about, and somebody else brought this up just the other day. They asked me, you know, what is it fundamentally that you really, really talk about, Michael? And I said, you know, all the stuff about extraordinary intimacy, that's icing on the cake. Ultimately, my big message is how so many people are shut down, how so many people are disconnected, yet there's a part of them that wants to be connected. Their hearts really do want to be connected, but they're afraid. They're afraid of being hurt. They're afraid of being rejected. They're afraid of all kinds of things. And our modern society makes it very easy to be distracted, very easy to keep a distance in that, so that it's a quote-unquote safe connection. Well, here's the thing. If you're truly going to connect, it's never going to be safe. It's all about feeling. I read a book this last summer by Michael Brown called The Presence Process. And it's an incredible book. I encourage everybody to read it. And the long and short of it is this, is that life is not about feeling better. It's about getting better at feeling. Okay. And my whole life up until about 2.5 years ago was avoiding feeling bad. But in the process of avoiding feeling bad, I don't feel the good stuff either. I don't feel anything. I don't feel alive. I don't feel I'm connected. I don't feel anything. And everything in our society conspires to help us really avoid feeling. And that is the biggest problem of all. So if you really want to know what my big mission is about, my big mission is about helping people feel again, because, you know, even if it feels uncomfortable or bad, at least you're feeling. You're not dead inside. And, life's kind of like a series of waves. Now, I live on the West Coast. I can see the ocean from my window here, and it's beautiful. I'm not a surfer, but I understand what it means to be a surfer. And life is like a series of waves. And you know, you can try to fight those waves and guess who's going to win, right? Or you can learn to study, and each wave is different. And you can learn to study them and then harness the wave for the ride of your life. Now, some rides are going to be pleasant and just exhilarating. And other rides are going to be, you know, hair-raising and painful, but it's still a ride.
Yeah.
And
the
key is each ride lasts just so long, whether it's one that doesn't feel good or one that feels euphoric. Life is a series of waves, and I think part of our job is learning to surf them in such a way that we harness the energy of those waves rather than fight it or ignore it. Ignoring the wave is the same as fighting it, because the wave will pummel you and hold you under and make you feel like you're drowning. So, yeah, it's really about, all about feeling again, allowing yourself to feel. You know, I used to think that I shut my heart down and was protecting it. And I have since learned, A, you can't shut the heart down. You can shut it out, but you can't shut it down. And the heart won't. That's right. And the heart never needs protection. You can't hurt the heart. Now, the ego, on the other hand, is something that needs all kinds of protection. So, people will say, oh, she broke my heart. No, she didn't. She broke your ego. Yeah.
And that's what that's what's wrong with these men now. The ego is broken. And some who are having the same disability with erectile dysfunction, their ego is broken. Oh, I'm not a man. You're still a man. You just have to find, like you said, you did. You have to find ways around it. See, we're so used to doing it. Oh, if I get it in, that's it. Climax, it's over with.
Yeah.
But now, see, and I think you appreciate it more that now that you have this. Okay, I gotta find ways to tease her and please her. It's always other ways to do stuff. Give her some flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, bathe her. It's other ways. We ain't always got to jump in the bed and say, okay, I'm done. That's it. It's over. Good night. Let me take a smoke, a puff. I'll see you in the morning. Michael, before our time, I like your quote that I found online, like it's not the size of the bat you bring to the game. It's how far you hit it out of the park. I said I like these little quotes.
And your female partner are the fans that are jumping up and shouting, hopefully, right?
But you know what they said, 87% of women reported moaning to boost their man's self-esteem and speed things up. So it kind of makes me wonder, like, guys, you need to probably check yourselves, or are you doing what you have to do? Because, I mean, they're faking it. Some women I have heard.
Yeah.
Just to fake it. Just to get it over with.
Yeah. Just to get it over with. Well, what does that say? I mean, it should be like, oh, my God, that was the most incredible experience of, you know, if men really understood, and again, in defense of men, we're never taught this. We were never taught this. And so, you know, again, part of my mission is actually to provide a platform for men to be taught what really works for women. And, you know, because we're not taught by our dad. Oh, God, if I told you how my dad taught me, I mean, it was like, oh, ridiculous. We're not taught by our buddies because we're all lying to each other. We're not taught by porn. God, why don't you just teach the exact opposite of what women really want? And so we're not taught. And so it just makes sense that there's once men are taught, and in a way that they can accept it without being feeling like, you know, they're men, they've just been emasculated. Once they're taught, they will then be in a position to unlock and unleash such extraordinary intimacy and sensuality, because I really do believe the fountainhead of most sensuality, it comes from the female. And when a man learns to unleash that by being, you know, very, very present for her and pleasing her in the way that she wants, he will be rewarded many, many, many times over from what just the typical, you know, 15-minute intercourse and roll over and snooze kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. So, Michael, is what you're sharing just for couples struggling with ED, or can other couples benefit as well?
Well, as I said before, this is for all couples in most couples, I think, are suffering from some sort of breakdown, some sort of disconnect. And this book will help them reconnect in a way that is conducive for both of them, and open up, become a gateway to such levels of intimacy that they didn't even think was physically possible. It's interesting because when I share the kind of experience that my partner and I have with normally functioning men and women, their jaw drops in disbelief. Like, say, I had one very attractive 26-year-old woman who's very sexually active tell me, she said, "I didn't even think that was humanly possible." And it is. It's available to everybody. If I can do it, anybody can do it. You know, that's the way I look at it. And it's very, very possible. And yet, and that's why this book is really for all couples. And it probably what will happen is many women will buy it and then share it with their man. Because that's usually what happens. That's usually the process.
That'd be a good thing. Help us need to get more intimate with each other. We need to start having that flame again and realize that it's just so much more to satisfy each other than, like I said before, just hopping in the bed and basically doing it the regular way. We have to add a little foreplay. It's called foreplay. To me, this sounds like foreplay. Just add a little bit extra. Spice it up.
Yes. In fact, we don't even call it foreplay anymore. We call it intimacy play. It's much more emotionally connected as well. It's not just physical stimulation. It's very emotionally connected, and it makes a huge difference. And we've even gotten to the place where we feel a sense of spiritual intimacy, where there's an exchange of energy that is not easily explained in the normal context of physical intimacy. And it is very, very, very powerful, very beautiful.
Well, it sounds beautiful, Michael. And I'm glad that you joined us and told us of this experience that you have that some of us have lost. And it's gorgeous. I can't wait for your book to come out. Michael, is there any other advice that you would like to give our listeners today?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is that, first of all, if my partner and I can do it, then any couple can do it. As long as you have a strong foundation of emotional intimacy, then everything I've discussed today and shared today is absolutely available to you. And it's just a matter of the man slowing down and the woman being, available enough to share with him exactly what she wants. A lot of women are a little bit reticent to do that. And then the other is get rid of the word performance from your vocabulary when it comes to the bedroom. It should not even exist. Never allow the word performance to enter into the bedroom. Instead, replace it with the word presence. And that means being fully present for each other. You do that, and you will start seeing extraordinary intimacy.
Well, you heard it from the horse's mouth himself, Michael Russell, and he told you where to get his book from, so I hope everyone takes heed and grab his book as quickly as possible. But, Michael, I thank you for being on The Bright Side with Technisha, and you have a blessed one.
You too, and you have a wonderful birthday. Treat yourself well today.
I will, Michael. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, listeners, I appreciate you for tuning in with me today. It has been a blessed one, and I love all of you.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.